Welcome to the Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farrand, owner of the company Hornsboden. And I'm not going to plug the Patreon before I introduce the guest. We're going to do a little bit of a discussion of it. So my guest today is Margaret Havgar. This is your third time, I believe?
Yep.
Wonderful. Last time, I think we were meant to speak about the topic we're doing today, but we ended up just talking about I think we did okay. I know you're laughing, but I think we spoke about the Oseberg ship as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've now done, like, we're so ready for this episode because we've really, like, laid the groundwork. So now I don't need to spend, like, 45 minutes getting into it for people to understand what we're talking about. I mean, I can always do that because I love talking about this shit, but at the same time, you can also just go and listen to that episode.
That is a good point. Probably, you know, I assume you probably don't have to listen to that episode before this one, but it probably would help if people do want to listen to the last episode we did together, where we gave a little bit more of an overall understanding of the Oseberg ship, the Oseberg burials, and what we have and what we found there.
I guess we could say is that it's not a requirement, it's not a necessity, but if you think Oseberg sounds interesting and it's something you'd want to know more about, then we get into a little bit other stuff there as well. So it's more kind of like a supplement, like a little snack if you want it.
They should have already listened to it, to be honest. If you haven't listened to it, I'm disappointed at you. I'm not mad, but I'm just disappointed you haven't already listened to it. So,
I mean, what are you going to do? It is what it is. We still love you guys, but no, yeah. I'm just kidding.
We do. Okay, so this is our first recording of 2024. Fucking what's happened between 2020 and now? How have we got here? But yeah, so this is our first main recording of 2024, and we've done a whole reshift over the podcast. We've got a few really exciting announcements. Let's start with yourself, I guess. So you're going to now appear as a reoccurring co-host. So it's not going to be an every week thing, hopefully once a month. But when it suits with the guest, you're going to hop on and grace us with your presence. That's the right term, right?
Aw, that's so sweet. Thanks, guys. Yeah, I'm super excited. I mean, just getting to do this, like, the first Sunday of the month, I think, was what we talked about, and then we'll see how it goes. But just being able to just hang out with you guys and talk about a bunch of crap, about, like, Norse stuff. I'm so excited. Yeah. I'm just rambling now, but
you have to now accept that you're technically the resident expert. So,
I mean, my ego isn't annoyed with that.
No, I bet. You know, we did an episode we did like a little meeting with the patrons, and we asked to get some feedback. And one of the things that came back to us that they wanted, like, more of like a lighthearted feel and a little bit more of a jokey aspect to the episodes. Whereas, you know what? I'm going to fucking out everybody right now because we can't
do it. Here we go, guys. Are you ready?
It's been a while. It's been a while, but we can't do anything right because we did a bunch of like lighthearted, fun episodes and then people wanted more scholarly. So we did more scholarly and now people want like the humory side of stuff. So now we have to try and find the balance of having fun, but also getting the information. And a good way to do that is to have a reoccurring co-host, because you build a rapport, you can have jokes, and it's not meeting. When I have a new guest on, I'm usually meeting them for the first time to sit and talk for an hour. It's hard to kind of have in jokes unless you already know them. So as soon as I was looking for a co-host, you were the one who came to mind straight away. Aww. Because, well, in our first episode, we spoke for 3 hours. I think towards the end of that episode, I'm pretty sure I was somewhat drunk. But we spoke for 3 hours with ease. It was the longest episode we'd ever done. The second time you came back, we hardly touched the topic. Yeah, even though we spoke about fun stuff, but it was a really fun, easy conversation. We're late starting the podcast today because we had a little tangent and started talking about my lovely shirt and me drinking old fashions. And it's just easy to speak with you. So
thank you. Likewise. I'm so excited about this. And can I also, I also just do a quick shout out to the chat because you guys are so sweet. Thank you for welcoming me. I'm so excited to get to know you guys too. And also, Sophie, I know, yes, it's Sophie. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I didn't get the names mixed up here. That would be a bad start to this whole co-host thing. But Sophie asked if I consented to being drawn, and I just want to say on air, then yes, I do.
There you go. That's a necessity for this podcast. Is you have to allow your likeness to Sophie. It will be a lot of fun because in our last episodes, anybody's listened to them. We clearly have a good rapport and can tease each other, which I think's important. And that's how you get the humor from having little in jokes and just being able to just have fun, not take things too serious. So maybe when we have those other serious scholars on, we can poke fun at them a little bit.
Yeah, poke fun and just kind of like pull out the humor. Because I mean, one of the things that I really love about this podcast and the conversations that we've had is that I'm the type of scholar where in order for me to make my work continuously fun for myself, I try to bring a bit of silliness to it, maybe not necessarily out loud and like the things I eventually publish, but when I'm writing stuff, I'm really, really silly. Like I write stuff, like I write curse words and just like vernacular stuff, like clunky or kind of I don't know where I'm going with this, but this looks like poop. Is it a piece of poop? I don't know. Like I try to keep it lighthearted to keep it fun because also I think that's one of the ways to keep research accessible to people is to not get used to or too used to using all these big words. But when you end up using big words, you are aware why you're using them. But then as much as possible, try to keep it in a way of like making sure everyone understands. I mean, I guess to me, it's about accessibility too, because I'm the only archaeologist in my family. And when I talk to my family, I want to be able to describe what I'm doing and why I think it's fun without having to, I mean, showing a PowerPoint is always fun, but without having to do like a PowerPoint of here's all the vocabulary you need to remember to understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think that's what makes what made Mateo so good and what I think will make you good is that you have the knowledge, but you also know how to explain it to little dummies like me, because you know, sometimes I sit here and do an episode with a scholar, and I think that they sometimes forget that the vast, vast, vast majority of the audience that they're speaking to are people who don't have that formal education. So it needs to be maybe explained in a little bit of a different way, because you're not speaking to somebody who automatically knows the little nuances that where I think you're a little bit more aware of that and can hold my hand a little bit more, I think.
Of course. I'd love to do that. And also, I think for me, this is also just so fun because, like I've mentioned the other times I've been here before, but in case people weren't aware of it, like the way I started before I even finished my bachelor's degree was that I had a part-time job as a museum guide at the currently closed Viking Ship Museum here in Oslo. And I really, really loved that job. And the main part of that job was not to do kind of your everyday kind of miscellaneous tour groups, but sixth graders. So I'm used to talking about this stuff in a way that's accessible to.
That's pretty much talking to me, I think.
Well, I mean, you're selling yourself short here, Dan. So, you know, be careful with the fishing for compliments. No, I'm just kidding. But my point was, I really love that job, and it's something that I miss, being able to talk about all of this kind of stuff in a way that's just really fun.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay, so we have a bunch of new stuff I need to kind of run through, so then we at least have some time for the episode. I guess the other biggie is we've changed our recording time from Tuesday to Sunday. So the recording time is now Sunday, 6 p.m., which hopefully makes it a little bit more accessible for everybody. We have a a worldwide audience. So trying to find a time that suits everyone has been incredibly difficult. So we're going to go with 6 p.m. UK time on a Sunday. So hopefully people are off work. Or if it is morning time in America, they're going to be able to jump on and watch live. Because a lot of people enjoy that. A lot of the guests do interact with the chat like you do, like, you know, guests we have on in the past. They like that back and forth. And there is usually a whole other little episode almost going on in the chat that is can be distracting.
I mean, I haven't commented so far, but I love that there's so much, you know, energy and conversation going on. And the chaos of Discord, yes. Thank you, Sophie.
Yeah, you get the Discord. Obviously, that is open to our Patreon members. And I genuinely think we have the most stacked Patreon on Patreon now. Because I moved about some of these tiers, and I genuinely think it might be the most bang for your buck you can get. And I'm not just saying that because I want your money. I am saying that because I want your money, because it helps us keep the podcast going and helps us grow. So let's not beat around the bush. But we've moved the Storytime episode with Jonas Lorentzen down from the middle tier to the entry tier. So now just for the £3 a month, which is works out about 10p a day, you're going to get the Storytime with Jonas Lorentzen, and we'll make all the back catalog accessible there as well. And you're also going to get the Q&A episode. So you're getting a bonus episode every week, plus the story time. And your face and your shock. You're also going to get a Patreon hangout once a month where pretty much all the patrons can jump in. The last one was a lot of fun. Whoever wants to have their cameras and mics on can. If you want to just sit and lurk, you can also do that. We'll play some games, some drawing games, just have a chat. It's a lot of fun. Obviously, Margaret, you will be welcome to join as well. So that's all on the £3 tier, which I think is, I genuinely can't do more for that tier now. I wouldn't have the time to. The tier up from that, we've added a brand new show that we've never done before. It's going to be a special creator episode. So I'm going to sit down once a month with a different creator from the Viking crafts world, and we'll record an episode whilst they do their craft, and they're going to let us know how they do it, the techniques they do it, the tools they use. People are going to be able to ask questions. It's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, if you're interested in any of that, that would be great. And on the top tier, for those of you that really want to splash out, the main benefit up there is you get 20% off Horns of Odin, which is obviously my company. The discount now lasts for the whole life of your Patreon, so you can, it had a limited use before, now you can use it as many times you want for the length of you being a patron and at that tier. And Margaret,
oh shit, guys,
okay, have you ever thought, I would love a personalized postcard handwritten from Dan?
I mean, obviously
I most people will have. So now anybody who signs up between now and the end of January will receive a handwritten personalized postcard. Now, I'm not saying it will be legible because my handwriting isn't very good, but they will receive it. And they will receive a handwritten personalized postcard from me. So that is, you have to sign up between now and the end of January, and you have to keep your subscription obviously past January. If you cancel in February, that's on you. I can't do anything about it. You still receive the postcard. Obviously, I would prefer if you didn't, but you would still get the postcard. So that's a nice little perk. And we're also going to give that to all the past patrons, everybody who's a member now as well, because we've had a lot of awesome people who stuck with us over the last 12 months. It's been a turbulent time. We've had a lot going on. I've had a lot going on in my personal life. And it's just a little thank you to everybody who's helped the podcast keep going, because we wouldn't have been able to do it without them. And I promise I'm getting to the end and we're going to start the episode. I had a question, actually. Go shoot.
Because you mentioned that the entry tier is £3, right? But what about the middle and the top tier? What are those?
The middle one is six And the top one, let me double check actually. The top one, because this is for all the flash people.
£16,000 a month, guys.
16,000, imagine. Yeah, if any, I mean, you can pay more. I think there is an option you can pay more. There is. The top one is £10 a month.
I mean,
yeah. I think there were the £6 one, I think, well, it has been very popular so far because people do like the idea of that creator episode. And the last thing is the YouTube channel. We get a lot of comments of people not realizing that we have a YouTube channel that you can not only see our pretty faces, but a lot of the time guests do bring slideshows. Obviously, again today, Margaret, you brought a slideshow. Terry Gunnell did. Paul Mortimer, when he was on, had a bunch of really cool replica weaponry from Sutton Hoo that he shows, and he's going to be coming on again, and we're going to be looking at that in more detail. So you can watch all the episodes on YouTube. Obviously, hit the subscribe, hit the little bell, help us boost that. I you know what? I'd love to get to like, we're on like 5,000 subscribers, but I'd love to get to like 10. I know it's a long way away, but it would be nice if everyone just,
I mean, you never know.
Subscribed. Eventually, we're getting there. We're chipping away, working his way up.
Yeah.
I want one of those little plaques, but they only give them out to like 100,000. So I don't know. I don't know who I'm going to have to. I was going to say something.
But remember, Dan. Remember,
I was going to say something weird that I couldn't have said then.
Slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Eventually, you'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there now.
Hey.
You can have a
credit where credit is due. No.
You can have a plaque. Okay, let's get into the show. Otherwise, we're going to have no time for a show. Do you want to let people know what we're going to talk about?
Yeah. So I guess I could say hi to any first-time listeners. My name is Margaret. You can also just call me Mags, by the way. That's kind of my nickname in English that I go by. My name is Mayetta Havgard. I am currently a PhD researcher at the Museum of Cultural History here in Oslo. And my PhD project is about the art of the Oseberg Viking ship burial. So I want to try to figure out what the heck is going on there. And my reasoning for doing that is that a lot of these things have been looked at separately. You know, when I say things, I mean that the burial is made up of a bunch of stuff that's put there at the same time, and then they built a mound on top of it. And a lot of the things that was in the burial has been looked at both sometimes together, but also separately. But there hasn't kind of been a complete analysis of all of the decorated stuff in there. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And my entryway into this was that there's currently a research project going on at the museum where I'm employed called Texrec, which is basically they're trying to get as much new info about the textiles capitalized from the Oseberg burial as possible. And what I mean by the textiles is that there's like a bunch of textile fragments from the burial, and they're all torn apart and or crumbled, and it's a mess, but they're really, really, really interesting and valuable because of the fact that we have so little of textile stuff from this time period. So this is kind of like the holy grail in a manner of speaking, just because it's still here. And so my entryway into this was that I applied for this PhD position through that project, and then since this project is focused on trying to figure out stuff about the textiles, they wanted someone to look at the art of the textiles. So the things that display pictures and imagery. And I then assembled a project where I went, hang on a second, instead of just, because there's more than enough of the tapestry fragments to just, with quotation marks, look at that in kind of a vacuum. But I wanted to look at more of the burial, because these things didn't exist in separate worlds. Maybe not the exact same person, but different people put all of this stuff in here at roughly the same time before the burial was closed. So I wanted to see, okay, but if we try to look at the images on the textiles, kind of do they correlate with the images on the wagon or the ship or the sleds that were there or other stuff that's decorated? And my long-winded, I'm slowly approaching the point that I'm trying to make here, is that these textile fragments are challenging to look at.
Yeah.
They're difficult to interpret. And that's not because the textiles are badly woven or made. It's just because of the fact that they're really old. And the color has mostly, we assume that it's been, if not bright, then at least very colorful, probably a bunch of different colors. But all of these have faded over time. So now you're looking more at like monochromatic, meaning just different hues within the same color, usually like brown or black or beige-ish. And I've looked at the Oseberg art for years now, because I did a similar thing, just focused on the ship for my master's thesis. But I hadn't really delved that deeply into the textile fragments. And so when I started this project, I had a really hard time keeping track of the different pieces. I had a really hard time understanding what I was looking at. And then my supervisor.
How many fragments is there?
That's such a good question, Dan, and I love that you asked that. And my answer to that is like kind of 200-ish, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less, because the thing is they keep falling apart.
Oh, no. Okay, so when one falls apart, do they become two separate fragments now?
That's the thing. How do you label this? How do you keep track of the labeling system? And how do you keep track of all of this? So I'd say that for the tapestry fragments, there are probably, I'm going to regret saying this on air because I'm probably going to have to correct myself at a later time, but you know what? I'm going to do it because it's going to show that research develops.
Yeah.
I'd say that there are probably at least roughly 80 pieces right now that have distinct imagery on them.
And would they
Probably
be
more,
from would they be
possibly less.
would they be from one tapestry?
That is also the question, because they were found within a room that was built on top of the ship. And this room had both been, it had had people enter into it in the 900s, approximately 120 years after the burial was constructed. Someone made their way in. We're a bit rough about it. We don't know exactly what they did, because at a later time, the mound has also been pushed upwards from the ground shifting. So the chamber has been smushed this way, and then the mound has collapsed that way. So even though they're really well preserved as textiles from the Viking Age, it is really difficult to know exactly where they were found. And unfortunately, the people who excavated them, even though they did a fantastic job in 1904, they unfortunately weren't overly concerned with detailing exactly where the different pieces were found.
Okay.
So I haven't gotten there yet, but me and my supervisor are both discussing trying to go back and get a lot of the negatives, because they actually took a lot of photos in 1904 during this excavation, surprisingly enough, and see if we can try to kind of cross-reference and backtrack and see if we can now try to establish where these different pieces were found. But to answer your
that
question,
must be impossible.
Probably, but I don't think we'll ever be able to say exactly where all the pieces were found. And that's okay. That happens even today with excavations, that sometimes details are lost. But I think what it can do is try to help us figure out what pieces might have come from the same bigger textile work. And some of them are likely from the same thing. Some of them probably aren't. And even though we don't know exactly what these textiles were used for, there's a bunch of likely hypotheses or theories. Like some could have been maybe bedspreads, maybe we're talking pillows, maybe we're talking clothing is difficult because we don't know whether or not they wore tapestry woven clothing. And also I might be getting going off on like an academic tangent here, but I just want to quickly mention, I know I've mentioned it before, but it bears repeating, that when I say tapestry like this too, that is also a technical term. It doesn't just refer to stuff that's been hanging on walls.
I'm
It's
so
a
glad you cleared that up.
yeah. So this is because that can get really confusing, and it's the same thing in Norwegian, where it refers to a way that it's been woven and that it displays images. It doesn't necessarily have to indicate that it was hanging like on a wall. And to that point, there's nothing in the burial chamber that indicates that there have been any sort of attachments or anything where things have been hanging. So at this point in my project, I assume that these textiles have been kind of spaced out and have been part of the interior decoration, if you will, of maybe, like, yeah, like I said, bedspreads, pillows, possibly maybe carpets, but that's, I don't know if they had those at the time. I don't know if they would be used like that. Some were maybe folded and put into chests that were opened during the 900 entry thing and were then kind of just like strewn across the room.
That
But the
was
thing was,
one. I was gonna say, that was
yeah,
one
go.
takeaway from our last episode, that I always thought of a burial chamber as a very, I guess a sterile type place. It's just all wood, and just, I guess, the bodies there and the weaponry or whatever. That's kind of always how it's shown on TV as well. You have like the body, and then you just put like, obviously they're wearing clothes, but you just wear the weaponry down with them. But then, as you mentioned it and said before about, you would put bedding in there. If you're going to go through the to have extravagant weaponry, very expensive weaponry, jewelry, then you would also put pillows, bedspread, all these different pieces in there.
Yeah, and I mean, even though there isn't necessarily like academic agreement on exactly what people at this time thought would happen when you died, there is a pretty big consensus, meaning that pretty much everyone agrees on the fact that at this time period, like at this time, people did not think that life necessarily ended when you died, and that when you buried someone, they were going to go somewhere else, whether that meant that they would physically move or whether they would like spiritually move, we don't really know, but it seems to indicate that they're kind of these burials, especially for well-off folks, where there was a lot of effort put into kind of giving them, I wouldn't say new start because that gives a lot of modern associations, but like being like, oh, you're going somewhere else now, so here's all, maybe all your stuff or stuff we think you'll need or stuff that's befitting someone in your station.
That's always fascinated me, I guess, and I've wondered whether they did believe that they would take things with us. I guess Egyptians are the best example, where we know that they believe that the things that were in there would then be taken to the afterlife. And I was wondering, is it that same kind of ideology with the Viking Age, or because for most
I
Christians, I
think,
guess it's more of a spiritual thing. It's that your soul, your spirit goes to heaven, hopefully, but you don't really take all your stuff with you.
okay, so I'm gonna try to do a quick explanation of this because this we could go off on a tangent here that could last for about 3 hours, roughly, give or take, because I think this is really interesting. So right here within academia, you have a lot of really interesting, not necessarily opposing, but differing views. So, I guess it's easier to start with the camp that I'm at. And these aren't necessarily camps that are battling, but it's just like people are like, I think it indicates this. And someone else is like, oh, but I think it indicates this. So the camp that I'm at is that it seems like, I don't know if I would call it a home, that the burial is a home, but the burial sure feels homey. It feels very personal, even though the Oseberg burial is so extra and so extreme. It does feel like there's been a lot of effort put into prepping someone. Like if you're sending off your kids to summer camp, you want to make sure they've packed everything they need. And it does feel, it has that kind of, I feel like a vibe of like there's been a lot of care and thought put into this. And then there, I don't really know where I land there yet because I need to continue doing my research. But you could say that on one hand, it indicates that this might have been kind of thought to be a home here in the mound, so that they would continue to live inside of the mound in their kind of post-life life. Or maybe they would go somewhere else. The fact that they're buried in a ship does seem to indicate that. At the same time, this specific ship was physically moored to the mound. Like they'd taken a rope and spun it and knotted it to a
Oh, wow.
boulder inside. So it seems like they were like, don't you go anywhere. We want to keep you right here.
Okay, wow.
And maybe it was a spiritual thing. Maybe it could have been a blend of the two. I honestly, I love that I haven't made up my mind about that because I think that's one of the things too that's hard to pinpoint from today's perspective because we just think so differently. But I love that there's so many different ways of viewing it. But kind of my point earlier in kind of giving that intro into my project about where I was going, the fact that I had a hard time interpreting what I was seeing was that that eventually led me after just a conversation with my supervisor where we'd ended up kind of looking at some photos together of some of the fragments and we ended up picking up on stuff that neither of us had seen before. She just kind of casually said, maybe we should try sketching them out again because most of them have been sketched in the 30s and 50s by some brilliant artists. But she kind of just threw it out there, maybe we should try resketching them a little bit. And I was like, that seems time consuming. I essentially blew it off
Oh,
completely the
wow.
first
Okay,
time around.
really?
Yeah, but then just 2 weeks later, it just stuck in my head, and I was on my way to a conference in Edinburgh, and I was on the train from King's Cross, from London, and it kept, I wouldn't say bugging me, but it kept like tickling my brain that I was like, I wonder what it would look like if I tried sketching it. And I have a laptop that has a touch screen. It's a Windows Surface Book. So then it has a pen as well. And I just downloaded Adobe Fresco because I had an Adobe subscription and I didn't want to start using Illustrator, but apparently Fresco was easier to navigate. And I imported a picture of the fragment in question and I just started doodling. Literally just started doodling and experimenting with the different color settings and like if I try to increase the contrast here or the red hues here, like what happens? And then eventually what happened is that since December 2022, I was about to say last year, but that doesn't apply anymore.
No.
Since December 2022, I've been sketching or resketching most of the tapestry fragments, which has been really cool.
The technological advances to be able to put them in there, and like you say, it just adjusts the coloring so you can see the different details and see lines that maybe you couldn't see before. I've noticed even just all the old stuff that I like to go and visit on my days off. Even when I'm taking a picture, particularly of like rock carvings, as soon as I put my phone up to take a picture with my phone, I can see the details so much clearer. And I don't know what it is about looking through my phone and the camera rather than with, the naked eye. The details just seem to pop, and you can see all these little things that you can't necessarily see with your eye.
Exactly. And I think I've been talking to my supervisor about this a bunch too, where to me, this has just kind of been a fun side project initially, where I'm like, I need to figure out what I'm looking at to begin with. But then she's kind of also fostered this thing in me where she's like, you need to not take the stuff that you do for granted because this is the first time that someone has been able to draw on top of the fragments, not top, on top of the fragments. So, like, the people who sketched them, we don't know exactly how they did it. I'm
Tracing
trying
paper.
to,
Imagine if it was just a little bit of.
Probably tracing paper and magnifying glass.
Oh my
And the
God.
fact that they
I can't
turned
believe
out
you
so
thought that it
good.
wasn't a good idea to redraw them.
I mean, neither. I mean, I stand corrected.
Yeah, we all
I
make
proved myself
mistakes.
wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody has those days. But yeah, so, and it's really cool then to be able to compare my sketches or my illustrations with the ones that we already have. Because the thing is, a major difference that I think, I'm not saying this to kind of rag on my own work at all. I just want to be very clear about this, is that the biggest difference to me personally, looking at the digital sketches I've made compared to the older illustrations that we have, besides the fact that one is digital and one is not, is the fact that I am not an artist. I'm not an illustrator. I don't have training in this. That doesn't make it bad or anything. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that I have a lot of respect for the artistry and the craftsmanship that goes into it. And it's been so much fun piecing this all together and then looking at the craftsmanship and the artistry of the people who did make the sketches in the 30s and the 50s, who were legit, like, illustrators. That's what they did for a living, as far as I've been able to tell, at least. And then comparing what I now see. And it's also, I've been gotten this feedback from other people in the academic community as well, is that it's really cool to now also then compare to what degree has maybe some of these fragments deteriorated further since they were sketched in, for example, 1916, and then now in, well, what was then 2023 is different, right? So then we can also kind of a little bit track what's happened to the fragments in that time span.
They had it easier than you.
I mean,
But
maybe in some respects.
then again, you do have the ability to digitally enhance them.
Exactly. So the thing is, one thing that I would say that I'm so thankful for is that regardless of what happens to my sketches, regardless of how I draw them, nothing will happen to the actual fragments. Since I'm completely detached from them, I'm working completely digitally. So I'm working with photos of the fragments. So nothing that I do in that sketching process has any effect on the physical piece itself, which is whoo.
Yeah, for sure. And you can, it's easy because you can rub things out. I've played with like an iPad and I think it's Procreate and an iP the iPencil. And it is amazing because I have no drawing skills. I'm awful at drawing. And I've
It's still
played,
so fun though, right?
that's the thing though. I've played with like, you know, some of the old, all different images that Luciano would send me from Children of Ashley. But like, hey, just try and, you know, not translate, trace this. So it's the same principle, like you can put it on and fade it right down and draw with the pencil over it, and then he'd tell me like where I was going wrong and what I'd missed, and it was a lot of fun. But just the technology of being able to do that, and you'll draw the line, and it obviously you can turn on different helps, so it helps draw like a smoother line, and you can get the curves nice, and also just being able to, I guess you'll probably really take advantage of, and what you're doing is like draw over everything really faintly and then rub out the gaps for like the overs and unders. And it also gives you a lot of appreciation for what they originally did, especially in like stone and wood, where you can't just rub it out if it's wrong. It's fucking wrong.
It is wrong. And what I think is, I'm going to show pictures, so this is going to make sense to you guys. But I mentioned this last episode, but I don't remember if it was during the Q&A, or not. But what I also think is really interesting when it comes to exactly that craftsmanship is that when these pieces were being woven,
I love how you say woven, by the way. It's every time you
woven.
said it so far, I love it. Please don't change that. It's
I'll try not to. Now you made me aware of
I've made you
it,
conscious of it.
but okay, let's see if I can do it again. When these pieces were woven, was that the right? Yeah,
Yes.
okay, cool. The thing is, when you look at them today, you'll see, since they're so deteriorated, you'll see threads that look like horizontal lines. But those threads are what are the ones that were attached to the loom, meaning one top, one on bottom. So they were attached like this, meaning that when you look at all of these pictures and you have horizontal lines in the back that were originally like this, that means that all of the motifs are woven in a way that to us would be, you know, at a 90 degree angle.
Yeah.
So they've kept track of exactly what they wanted to do. Well, I don't know if they had like neck issues. I would.
Maybe, yeah.
But, or
yeah,
let, like they'd get that someone who's so, even, or maybe like they get so good at their craft, they wouldn't need to tilt their head.
Maybe, yeah. They're just so used to doing it.
Yeah.
It is, it's absolutely fascinating. I don't know how. Anything with textiles, I really do think is amazing, especially the way it was done with like a loom, and just having to feed in all the different pieces of fabric or like threads, and then to be able to make up like images. I don't get it. I don't understand the foresight to be able to do that, especially when you can't like draw it out prehand and follow like a little guide.
I know. I mean, the thing is, we don't know. Maybe they did that. Maybe they made small scale versions. But I assume that the craftsmanship involved here is that people were so good at what they were doing that they could essentially do it. Okay, this is just me hypothesizing, guys. This has not been proven. I'm just speculating here. But just the reason I think this is because my mom is an avid knitter.
Okay.
And she knits a shit ton. And she's really good at it. And just now when I was home for Christmas, she showed me these blankets that she'd made. And I was like, holy crap, that's so good. Like, what kind of recipe did you use? Where'd you get it from? And she literally just said, oh no, I saw a picture online. And I just did it.
Yeah, okay.
And
Okay.
Based on that type of stuff, I'm like, if these people were so good at what they did, I assume they could basically just go, yeah, so now we're going to do that here, and then they just did it.
Yeah, I think we can underestimate.
Again, depends on who you're talking about, of course, but continue, yes.
But yeah, we can underestimate how good people can get with just a shit ton of practice. You know, if you really do something over and over and over again, you just it becomes second nature. People can do things that seem almost superhuman to the rest of us, but it's just because they've really put that time in of just perfecting the craft.
Exactly. And it's like they get that tactile knowledge as well, which is just as, you know, relevant today, is that at some point you become so, and you hear this a bunch when you're talking about woodwork or stonework, but I think it applies just as much to textile work, that you get this knowledge where it's not that you won't be able to explain what you do, because you will, but you're so in tune with your craft that it's almost like things get a certain vibration or feel to it. So that like when woodworkers talking about, like when they're talking about kind of listening to the wood or feeling kind of, I'm not going to continue on with that because that could get real weird real quick. But just like the material that you're working with, being able to almost be in conversation with it, because you're so good at what you do that you don't need to sit there and look at it and go, oh, is this too thin? Is it too like big? It's just like, no, this is the right feel.
Yeah.
And then whoop, into the loom it goes.
I completely get that, and not to blow my own trumpet or horn. You know, when I'm working on horn, I've done it so much now that I can get a feel. I just know if something's gonna go wrong or
exactly
right. Like you can just feel if there's like a little gap. It just feels a little different, and it would be impossible to ever explain to anybody what that feels. But you can just tell if there's like
it just feels the right way.
Yeah, or it's probably because I've carved thousands of horns and there's a very slight difference in how the layers are made up. And if the layers are a little bit loose, the carving piece probably feels just a little bit different. And you can just tell. And it gives me a horrible sinking feeling when I feel it. But I definitely get it.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, that's exactly my point with the tactile knowledge, which I think I'm tactile then meaning stuff you can touch and knowledge that you have in your hands and in your body that is necessarily from instructions, but from personal experience, from
Yeah.
working with it.
Okay, let's look at
All
some of
right.
these pieces, because we do have I'm recording one of the story times with Jonas Lorentzen after this. Which
Yes,
you get
yes, yes,
access
yes.
now from the £3 tier on the Patreon. So if you want to check out the story time, it is just 10p a day works out at, and it's like buy me a cup of coffee. So, you know,
Do it, guys.
if you ever thought you'd like to buy me a cup of coffee once a month, then check out the Patreon. There is, like I say, there is a ton of new stuff on there. It's worth taking a look at. You should be able to share your screen. So again, throw back to the start of the episode with the YouTube. You can watch all the episodes live, and there is usually some visual aspect going on, because a lot of time we're dealing with, you know, little pieces and slideshows that people have. So Margaret is going to pull up some of the pieces so we can actually see her beautiful work.
Thank you. And I just want to say before you guys see it, that when the thing that is just brown, that is the textile piece, when that changes color, those colors are not accurate representations of colors that might have been on the fragment, but there are, this is me playing around with how Adobe Fresco reads like red or yellow. And then trying to see if I can get more contrasts so that I can color in and make lines and figure out what I'm looking at. Does that make sense?
So
Yeah, cool.
does that tr so that tries and picks up the differences in the brown and tries to pick up.
Yeah.
So he actually tries to,
So.
sorry for anybody looking at this, we're just all who are only listening. We're looking at what is, it looks, oh, with all due respect, Margaret, it looks like a cow
Pile of
part.
shit.
It looks like a cow
Yeah.
part. Like one that's been left out in a nice warm summer's day.
It's a bit crackly.
Yeah. So do you, one that Rocco would probably like to try and eat, the little wanker, who's,
Absolutely.
it's his new thing that he likes to do. But so when you scan this in, the wonders that are Adobe, it tries and recognizes colors from this shady brown
Yeah.
mess.
So I can show another one afterwards that can show you kind of how different each piece is, because this is one of the pieces that is super monochromatic. So even Adobe Fresco has a hard time picking up on different hues, but the textiles are very, they vary a lot in how they pick up color and how much color is preserved. So here's kind of just to give you, this is one of my favorite pieces because there's just so much going on.
It's
But
so
also
fascinating
like
because you can see a little bit of something. You know,
there's
I.
something, right? There's something going on here. There's like some patterns or whatever
Oh yeah.
here.
You know what? The
And when
more
I
I
see
look at it.
here, I'm referring to my cursor that people can see on the screen.
The more I look at it, the more I feel like I can see bits. I feel like I can see a shield or like a circular thing right about halfway down, a third of the way
Yeah.
over.
So here I've now like I've just started playing the time lapse. So this is essentially me just trying to sketch out what's happening. And when I sketch, I saw Sophie in the comments earlier talking about layers. I have like sometimes my computer has such a hard time opening these files because I have 3 million layers for each single one. Because I
This
sketch and I resketch and I erase and I redo all of it.
Oh, Margaret, this is amazing. And then
Thank you.
the chat is loving it as well, because, you know, as horrible as it sound, it did look like just like a cow part. But you could clearly see like a little bit of something, but nothing in any detail. And watching this time lapse and it actually come to life, and how there are details in there and you pulling them. I have to implore anybody who's just listening to this to just pop over to the YouTube, because you won't be disappointed. That's not even a plug just to try and get you to subscribe, but hit but do subscribe while you're there. But it is amazing and it's fascinating to watch.
So this is, I also want to mention that the time-lapse that we're looking at right now is the result of many days' work. So when the time-lapse and Adobe Fresco is pulled together, it just pulls together all of it. Mm-hmm. But I did not sketch all of this in a day. Like, this is me working. And it does by no means go by this quickly. Mm-hmm. But so here, again, this is not very audio-only friendly, but at the moment in the time-lapse, we are witnessing me just switching between layers and it looks super glitchy, but it's just me trying to be, what have I seen and what have I not seen? Blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And right now, I think if I recognize this, yeah, I'm still redoing some of the sketchings, but at this point I've started to kind of color code for myself. So I'll do one layer where I'm like, everything that looks purple to me is now being colored in. And then I'll redo it a little bit again. And then I'm like, everything that looks green this time will be colored in. Mm-hmm. And then I compare the layers afterwards to see if I get, like, if I'm able to identify motifs and shapes more easily when I have kind of, it's literally like a coloring book, except I don't have that clear cut of kind of a pattern or a
just
template.
The same. To say that you had no prior artistic like training. Oh, who left the thing on? Oh, Henry.
Hi, Henry.
Henry, you left your audio on. It's all right. Don't worry.
Hi.
Don't worry. Thank you for the kind words about my little setup. I appreciate that. You know what? It's so funny because in the settings somewhere on Zoom, you can make it so force turns people's microphones off, but for some reason it never works and we get lovely little interactions like that. So, you know what, Henry, thank you very much.
It's all fun.
It was very nice what he was saying anyway.
Yeah.
To say he didn't think we could hear him. So I very much appreciate that. It was sweet. But back to what I was saying was, to say that you've done this with no prior artistic kind of training and I guess no real depth of work with Adobe. Did you say it's called Fresco?
It's called Fresco, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty, pretty amazing. Oh, Henry.
Thank
left.
You.
Henry, I'm so sorry. I feel bad.
No, but thank you.
Hopefully
probably just,
back.
It was just a fugue. Henry, come back to us.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. But thank you. I really appreciate it. And to me, this has also been a really like gratifying process, just like since this wasn't what I was planning on doing to begin with. It's just been, I use the term organic a lot when I talk about my sketching process, because it was really like I was figuring it out as I went along. And honestly, when it comes to the way that I work, that's usually the best way to go, because then I don't lose interest. I don't feel like there are any like goals that I have to reach. I'm just like, I'm having a hard time identifying what I'm looking at. So I'm going to just kind of draw it and then figure out, oh, if I do it like this, then I can see that stuff better. And then I mean, for me, I haven't watched this time lapse in forever, but to me, this is also like really fun to rewatch because I can see my own technique developing and I can, I think I saw someone in the chat mentioning, I didn't see the whole comment, but mentioning something about like having certain memories attached to drawing. And when I'm looking at this right now, I can remember going, oh yeah, if I do it this way, then maybe that'll also work on these other fragments, because then I have comparative material. And then suddenly my process shifted a little bit and I started redoing things,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of fun.
It's so fascinating to watch. And you see kind of coming together, and even watching, you can see how like almost your brain working of like going back and checking, seeing the little things and going between the layers.
Mm-hmm. And being like, what is this? What is this? And then being like, oh shit, should I like switch colors for these types of things so that I can actually see it when I put all the layers together?
Mm-hmm.
I still don't have a unified way of doing that. So I wouldn't say I have kind of a template of a way that I sketch stuff now, but it is very flexible and it really, hang on, let me just answer question in the chat. According to or regarding the size of the textiles, if you can see on the right hand side of the photo, there is a ruler, and that is a centimeter ruler. So I'm not sure exactly how big this piece is. This is one of the bigger pieces, so it's about 28 centimeters long.
Okay, so it's about 12 inches, roughly, just short of 12 inches,
yeah.
which isn't big.
No, these pieces are not big at all, and this is one of the bigger ones.
So Sophie had a good point. How many times have you said gone, oh shit, wrong layer? Which,
so many times.
Oh my god, I've done that when I had like three layers open, so let alone when you have so many.
And then like I've started locking layers now if I've like finished for the time being with one layer, because sometimes I've accidentally started like sketching with another color in the same layer and I'm like, no,
Oh my god, yeah.
god damn
Oh,
it.
yeah, that's got to be so frustrating.
Yeah, so what we're looking at right now is that it's kind of hard to tell a little bit, but I've now been working on a lot of like shading and coloring in, right? So what I do after that is that I then use those layers, but then I fade them down so that I can outline. So yeah, that was that time lapse.
Do you have an image of the finished one? Oh,
Yes.
I hope Henry's okay. I feel so awful.
Henry's now become the main character of this episode.
No, I genuinely feel so bad. Because I was trying to not make him feel bad by saying it was cool, and then now Henry left. So Henry, if you're listening to this after the fact, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you leave.
Let's see here. I'm just trying to find the correct ones.
Oh yeah, Kim, see if Henry's in the Discord and you can just tell him it's cool. It's all good. I'm such like a soft person, really. I just feel awful when little stuff like that happens, because we've all left our
Oh,
microphones and
yeah.
cameras on.
A
And
friend of mine, genuinely, she was in a lecture, university lecture, and apparently her mic was on. And then her cat had jumped on the counter and eaten her roommate's dinner. And her entire class and her professor heard her, like, giving her cat so much shit and basically yelling at her cat.
did you see the lady? I'm pretty sure it was. Oh, it happened all the time during COVID as well. I'm pretty sure during COVID, and she left like behind her what was a very big sex toy. I mean, good for her. Good for
Good for her.
her. Yeah, good for her. Like, there's no shame in, but it was like on the bookshelf behind her. But obviously, the size just made it more visible. It really just stood out there, and she must have just been talking and not realizing it was there, and it was kind of like just in the background the whole time doing the interview. And it's just like,
Fun times.
just you can't, there's not much you can do about that. You just got to own it.
Yeah, you do. I mean, what else are you going to do, right? So right now I've pulled up a different picture. So these are now still images and not video. But this one, I can see that it's a bit dark. But this is essentially the fragment with my outline, is what I call it, with just the black lines showing the motifs. And I'll just go through a few different ones to show you kind of how different but also similar it can look with the different layers kind of showing. So this is just the black lines, and here you have with just the coloring.
It's starting to look more like a, I know, because you've got the black, the brown background. It looks more like a rock painting. Like,
yeah,
a,
doesn't it?
There's so much detail on there now compared to the first image you sent or showed.
Yeah, and I'm just going to skip past a couple that I just took some screenshots to show how different the layers look. But here's another one with coloring where I've done different colors on top of one of like the, I guess you could call color graded versions of the image. And here there's no background suddenly. So this is just what I've sketched without the textile in the background. And I think I have, yeah, so here you have a full sketch. I can start to kind of zoom in a little bit.
Okay.
That
Oh wow.
Suddenly you have a lot of details going on here.
So there's clearly some sort of horse. I assume it's some sort of like battle scene almost.
It's called a battle scene, and I don't think that that's such a dumb interpretation because this is one of the few ones where we have people moving in opposite directions. So you have some people walking in this direction towards the left, but then you have other people or other creatures walking in the opposite direction towards the right. And it seems that these are people bearing shields and what to me looks like swords or other type of sharp implements.
What's the below the horse? Do you think that's like a showing like an encampment or tents? I guess it could also be fire, maybe.
These ones are difficult because they're so degraded, but it's been referred to as a spear formation. And to me, that checks out. It kind of looks like spears that are intertwined.
Now you said it,
And spear shapes appear a lot on a lot of the different textiles, and they seem really similar to those. So I think that, and we also have a feature here that's been coined the shield wall.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
So I also just want to preface when I'm talking about the pictures or the images that you see, or like the motifs and the figures on these textiles, where I am in my current process is that I haven't really landed on what I think everything is yet. So I think that those interpretations are really cool, and I don't necessarily think that they're wrong. I just don't know what my own opinion is yet. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But what I think is really cool about this specific fragment is that it has at least four of what I call hybrid creatures. So creatures that have both human but also non-human characteristics. And perhaps the most clear cut of those, I hope the resolution on this image is good enough. I think so. Yeah. Is this one right here.
The raccoon looking one. That's the one I was looking at before.
Yep.
And I thought it was your drawing, but I'm glad you said now that it is.
I'm just really shit at drawing, guys. So it's been interpreted as a bear warrior. And some people earlier have then thought that this is supposed to indicate a person who is just literally wearing like a bear hide, which it could very well be. I'm more in kind of the what my scientifically inclined friend calls the ooey wooey part of academia, where especially when it comes to stuff from pre-Christian North Scandinavia, I'm not at all opposed to the idea of people having a very different view of the world and thinking that things that we today think are superstitious or borderline ridiculous could very well be a fact of life. So I'm not yet at a point where I can say for sure whether or not I think that is a person wearing a bear hide or an animal covering. I just as much think that since these are depictions that might necessarily have occurred in real life, I think it might very well also be a creature that is a blend. So both a bear and a person, or neither at the same time. Does that make sense?
We see in all like the wood carvings and stone carvings, there's so many different beasts and creatures that don't really resemble anything. And even when you have something like a bear or a wolf or a lion portrayed in this art style, it never actually looks like a bear, a wolf, or a lion. Maybe there's little pieces there, but it's not recognizable to what we see. So this could be anything.
It could be anything. And I also think that
looks non-human.
Yeah. But at the same time, it does look a bit human because
it's got human feet.
It got human feet, and it's carrying stuff in the same manner that to what other seemingly very human motifs are doing. But at the same time, it looks different. So,
okay, before we wrap up, because I Jonas is going to be here shortly, and we need to do like a little Q&A for people after.
Absolutely.
The one thing that jumps out at me is if it is a battle scene and it is warriors, you have a bunch of people in what look like dresses.
Yep.
And that has to have sent people talking or asking questions all
over.
Oh,
yeah. This specific textile fragment is pretty, within certain circles, pretty famous for these figures that we're looking at right now, which are popularly coined the Valkyries. And to me, they're wearing very long clothes that could absolutely be dresses. This is a topic for a different time that I would very much like to talk to you about, Dan. But I'm also in the sense where I'm
we can
like,
do that.
At what point did dresses become synonymous with girls? That being said, I'm not opposing that these could be women. I want to make that very clear. But I'm opposed to the idea that pants equals boy and dress equals girl,
Okay,
just as a fact of life.
I get that, because obviously the most famous skirt wearing men would probably be like the Scottish and the kilts. But
And
obviously
we don't know how they would represent different people at this time. I very well think they can be women, absolutely. But I guess it would be more accurate to say, then why are automatically all the people wearing what look like pants to us, or trousers, my bad? Why are the people who are then wearing trousers automatically men?
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is the reason why the Celts wore kilts was because of the landscape that they were usually moving over and running over would be quite uneven. So it would be easier to do it in a kilt rather than in a pant or a trouser. So, you know, we all know that the topography of Scandinavia isn't the flattest. So it would make complete sense that they would do something similar when you're having to move in speed. Yes,
Yeah,
Jimmy,
and I
Lagatha did wear trousers, but I think
she did indeed. But I think, so kind of like my point here, which I just want to, for my own sake, want to be very clear with, I'm not saying that this can't be women. I'm just saying that I am very, since we do know a little bit about fashion in the Viking Age, absolutely. I'm not trying to say that, but we don't know why they would make images the way that they made them. So I don't know how sure we can be that our current interpretations necessarily apply to the Viking Age. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes complete
So,
sense.
like, you can just look at like toilet signs. If you have a person wearing a skirt, that's the women's room.
Yeah.
And then pants looking shapes are men's rooms. So I'm just unsure of whether or not attire is indicative of biological sex and gender. Is what I'm saying.
No, it's an interesting topic, and we will come back to it, and we can do that next time. We can explore that side of things. But let's wrap this up for now. I know we took up a lot of time at the start with announcement and the changes, but it was important to get out there. You know, we've
yes, of course,
really spent some time behind the scenes putting this together and trying to make everyone feel like they're getting as much as they can for the money. And we're very much aware that through the sort of turbulent last 18 months, we've been quite lacking at giving rewards sometimes, just because we've had tons of different things going on behind the scenes. So we wanted to really try and be forward with that and make sure people were getting extra and really, yeah, again, bang for your buck to make sure that people are getting those rewards and getting what they deserve for supporting the show, because it means a lot, and it is literally how we keep going. And we're almost at episode 200, which is fucking insane to think that when we first started this that we would get anywhere near 200. So yeah, thank you to everybody who's been along with the journey and stuck with us so far. And obviously it's a new chapter, bringing Margaret on as a reoccurring co-host. This is going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, do you have anything you need to plug or show?
I guess I can just repeat that my Instagram is archeomags, with archeo with a K, if anyone's interested. And that's, I mean, I have a YouTube channel with the same handle, but that's been pretty dead for the past couple of years. Don't have time to kind of revamp that right now, but it's there for anyone interested. I was thinking, unless we don't have time for it at all, I do have just one other fragment that I can show that we can have in the background for the Q&A, just so people can see the contrast.
Yeah.
Since not all of them.
No, no, perfect. That would be great. So if you want to see that other fragment, obviously, if you want to listen to the Q&A and you get the whole back catalog. So when you sign up to the Patreon, you don't only just get the moving forward, you get all the Q&As from the past. So if there's an episode you listen to that you realize you want to hear more, there's going to be a Q&A that goes with it, and you can listen to that a little bit extra. And a lot of times the patrons have a bunch of questions that I've just completely missed because I'm too excited in the episode. Obviously, follow the podcast, Just Nordic Mythology Podcast, on all the different social medias, the YouTube channel, a like, share, comment. All the little things help us keep going. You can follow me, Daniel and Scott Farron 1 on Instagram. And obviously the business, Horns of Odin. We've just released a winter range with a bunch of cool items on. You can go and check out. But yeah, let's jump over to the Q&A. Let's look at this new piece, the other piece that you have to show us.